Yes, sir, we promised you a great main event here tonight. So what is it here?
Nick Andre!
The China!
WrestleMania!
Hulkamania is running west!
My God, what the hell?
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views from the Men in Tights Podcast. And if you're wondering why I sound the way I sound, I literally just woke up about 20 minutes ago, so I'm still trying to be fully awake for this. But I decided I'm just going to go ahead and record this as soon as I wake up, so here I am. And I hope you all are having a wonderful week so far, and I hope that you had a wonderful Valentine's Day if you're into celebrating that last week. And if you didn't have a fun Valentine's Day, you're not having a good week, then I hope it gets better for you eventually. And as always, please subscribe to the Menatize Podcast on Spotify, Google Podcast, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, YouTube, wherever you can find the Menatize Podcast. And follow me on Twitter at IamFostitute for all future podcast information and updates. And this edition of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views is all about WCW Super Brawl 2001. I'm so used to saying 20, insert whatever year, over the last decade, so, yeah. Super Brawl 2001, aka Super Brawl Revenge. And I've never seen this pay-per-view before at all, before I decided to cover it for this podcast, so I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Now let's go ahead and take another trip down at WCW memory lane. First matchup we had was Evan Courageous versus Jamie Noble versus Kaz Hayashi versus Yang versus Shannon Moore versus Sugar Shane Helms in a four corners six man elimination match. Billy Kidman was originally supposed to be in this match, but was randomly attacked by Road Warrior Animal during the pre-show for the pay-per-view, so he was replaced by Shane Helms in this match. And then the winner of the match would go on to the following month's pay-per-view, WCW Greed, which would end up being the final pay-per-view for WCW, and they would face whoever is the Cruiserweight Champion by that point. And as expected, this was a match full of all kinds of fast-paced, high-flying madness, which is a staple of the WCW Cruiserweight division, and not so much the early years of the WWE Cruiserweight division. But, you know, it is what it is. there were a few botches during the match, but, that's to be expected with such matches, because, of the fast-paced, non-stop action that they present to us. But, I really enjoyed this match, though, I really did. Mostly because of the nostalgia that I have for that time in my life as a fan of pro wrestling, but also because it was a really fun match. It really was. I really enjoyed it a lot. And in the end, victory would go to Shane Helms after hitting the Vertebreaker on Kaz Hayashi, which, if you've never seen the Vertebreaker finishing move before, the fact that it hasn't paralyzed anybody, as far as I know, it's amazing. Because it is a very, very risky move that all the trust is placed into the person performing the move to not completely drop you on your head. Because, the one receiving it, they have to do their part, make sure they don't land on their head and break their neck. But, because the person performing the move could easily slip out of their arms and just drop on their head. And they got a snap neck and then they can't do anything. Then after the match, they showed a security video of Ric Flair backstage with Road Warrior Animal and Chavo Guerrero talking about who the hell knows. Then we had a quick promo from Hugh Morris talking about getting vengeance on his former teammate, The Wall. Then we saw Ric Flair giving an envelope to Scott Steiner talking about the future of WCW, future of Kevin Nash, and Steiner's future as well before walking out right after. Then we see Brian Clark and Brian Adams entering the arena before being stopped by Commissioner Lance Storm, who was saying Clark hasn't been cleared to wrestle on the show and demanded he go see the company doctor. And all of that happened about as quickly as I just described it. No exaggeration. Then we did have the match with The Wall versus Hugh Morris, the former teammates of Misfits in Action, General Hugh G. Rection. That's right. And General, or sorry, Sergeant AWOL. Sorry, again. Very early in the morning, just woke up, like I said, about 20, almost 30 minutes ago. But, you know, this was actually a much better match than I expected it to be. I was pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed it. It was a hard-hitting fight from bell to bell, very little time for rest, and to me, this match showcased exactly why Bill DeMott was employed as head trainer for the WWE for so many years, you know, before the controversy that led to his resignation in 2015. Anyway, Hugh Morris essentially won the match after hitting a near-perfect moonsault off the top rope that he, at the time, called the No Laughing Matter, which is a pretty clever name. And we followed this up with Conan, K-Dog, whichever name you prefer for him, marching towards Ric Flair's office, but was stopped by Road Warrior Animal, who was standing outside Ric Flair's office as a security guard, basically, and they brawled in the hallway. Yeah. And then after this, we had the WCW World Tag Team Championship match, Mark Jindrak and Sean Stasiak versus defending champions Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo, the former stablemates of the Natural Born Thrillers, which I had honestly forgotten that they were and that was even a thing. Because a lot of what happened in WCW during this time, from 2000 to 2001, I don't really remember that much about, you know, besides, you know, certain things that were a big deal at that period, which one of them I'll get to a little later. Also, I'd completely forgotten that Sean Stasiak's theme song in WCW at this time was a blatant ripoff of Kurt Hennig's Mr. Perfect theme, which I'm surprised WCW was never sued for, because it was literally Mr. Perfect's theme. If you check out this pay-per-view and you or just anything that featured Sean Stasiak's WCW career during this period, you'll hear exactly what I mean. And this one was another fast-paced, you know, high-impact match, which, you know, I'm starting to notice a pattern with this pay-per-view when it comes to that. But it was also an enjoyable match, and, you know, I mean, I was never a fan of Sean Stasiak. I mean, it's not that he was a bad wrestler, it's just I couldn't get invested in him as a character, but I was a fan of Chuck Palumbo and Mark Jindrak, and especially Sean O'Hare. I mean, Sean O'Hare was always one of my favorites, and it's really such a shame how things went for him. It really is. But anyway, this was another fun match that saw O'Hare and Palumbo retain the WCW World Tag Team titles after a flawless, flawless senton bomb from Sean O'Hare to get the pin. And seriously, if you've never seen Sean O'Hare do the senton bomb, like I said, it is a near flawless move when he performs it, or performed it, rather. Rest in peace, Sean O'Hare. Then next was a backstage segment with Dustin Rhodes talking about how Ric Flair was holding him back and wanting to keep him out of WCW by keeping him at home for 8 months prior to that, and proclaimed that he was going to draw first blood on Flair's crew when he takes the US title from Rick Steiner, which we will get to in a few minutes. Then we had Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Chavo Guerrero Jr. for the WCW Cruiserweight Championship, and this was an unmasked Filthy Animals era. Rey Mysterio with devil horns glued to his forehead and Tommy Hilfiger denim overalls, taking on one of his greatest rivals in Chavo Guerrero for the Cruiserweight Championship, like I said. Yeah, I'm reading this from notes that I had written while I was rewatching the pay-per-view last night. So I might be repeating certain things, but yeah. And if you've seen any of the matches between Rey and Chavo in WCW or WWE, then you already know what to expect. And it did not disappoint at all. At least to me, it didn't. And honestly, this was probably my favorite match of the entire show, even with some of the botches that the match had. Yeah, which again, like I said, the Cruiserweights matches that they had in WCW botches were to be expected. And there was one spot in the match that actually scared me a little bit. It was like a sort of springboard hurricanrana where Rey was holding Chavo's arm at the same time. They went outside of the ring because they were standing on the apron, and Rey bounced off the rope, caught him with a hurricanrana, and they landed on the outside. And to me, it looked like it almost killed Chavo because he landed right on his head. And just the fact that it didn't paralyze or at least seriously injure him is a damn miracle. It really is. Then after some more action and a chair shot to the head and a brainbuster suplex, Chavo would get the win and retain the Cruiserweight title, going on to face Shane Helms at the Greed pay-per-view the following month. And then we follow this up with Commissioner Lance Storm backstage informing Brian Adams that he and Brian Clark would be facing the team of Totally Buffed, which is Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell, and that it would be happening after the next match on the card, which we're getting to right now. Rick Steiner versus Dustin Rhodes for the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship. Yes, in WCW it was known as the United States Heavyweight Championship. They don't call it that in WWE because reasons. And this was another match that was a hard-hitting fight from start to finish, with Dustin going full force on Rick before the bell even rang. And this match did a great job of, to me at least, showcasing just how truly gifted both men were and are in the ring. And honestly, I feel like Rick Steiner doesn't get nearly as much credit as his brother Scott does, which is really unfair because the man was a damn beast in the ring, and this match showed it very well, in my opinion. I mean, I know a lot of fans always want to talk about Scott Steiner mainly because of his promos, which can be hilariously entertaining for all kinds of reasons. But Rick Steiner, the dude was legit. I mean, they were both world-class athletes, but Rick Steiner, he was the real deal. He was one of those wrestlers that was legitimately the real deal in the ring. But it is what it is. And he would go on to be victorious after dropping Dustin on an exposed turnbuckle. But then after the match, Dustin would get payback after hitting the Shattered Dreams to Rick in the corner, which I don't know what they were calling it in WCW because they couldn't legally call it the Shattered Dreams because that was copyrighted by WWE. But anyways, then the next backstage segment that we had saw Lance Storm getting ready for his match happening later on in the show when Ric Flair came in to ask that anyone who isn't on their team be removed from the arena after the matches, and that whoever wins the Chronic versus Totally Buffed match receives a shot at the tag team titles. And that match is right up next. It's Totally Buffed, which again, the team of Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell taking on the team of Chronic, which is Brian Adams and Brian Clark, aka Kona Crush, or Demolition Crush, and Atom Bomb of the WWF. And then before the match started, Lex and Buff cut a promo based boasting about how superior they are to everyone else, and then announced that Brian Clark had not been cleared to wrestle and that Brian Adams would be having to go it alone in this match, which wasn't entirely true because Clark did come out for the match but was then taken out by Bagwell with a steel chair. Or was he? And this was yet another enjoyable match for me, which, again, just surprising how much I was enjoying a lot of the matches on this pay-per-view. I felt legitimately invested in this match. And just what it looked like, Brian Adams had the win with the full Nelson. He was attacked from behind by who we thought was Brian Clark, but turned out to be Mike Awesome in disguise, along with allowing Buff rather to score the pinfall for his team and earning a shot against Palumbo and O'Hare for the tag team titles, which I don't know if it was at the Greed pay-per-view or if it happened on like Nitro or Thunder later that week. At some point I'll get to the Greed pay-per-view and I'll cover it on here. I'm just not sure when. And then we cut backstage to Chronic being escorted out of the arena by security before eventually getting into a fight with security and beating the hell out of those guys. And then next up, we had Lance Storm versus Ernest the Cat Miller for the position of WCW Commissioner. And like I said, I'm not completely familiar with a lot of what happened with WCW, the storyline wise, at the time, because I wasn't as invested in WCW as I had been, but prior to that, because throughout the 90s, I was very into WCW as well, but from 2000 to 2001 is when I started to drop off, which, that's just the sign of the times. But yeah, we got the classic, if I can be serious for a minute, promo from Lance Storm, which is always fun. And then demanding that they play the Canadian national anthem before being interrupted by Ernest the Cat Miller calling Lance Storm a Power Ranger for whatever reason. And then this was not the typical technical wrestling match that you'd normally see from Lance Storm. And it didn't need to be, because for the purposes of the story for the match, it didn't require it to be a technical wrestling classic match kind of thing. This was a very well-executed brawl inside of the ring, outside of the ring, from bell to bell that I enjoyed very much. Again, like I said, just surprised by how much I enjoyed this pay-per-view, especially considering how not so great WCW was during this time. But yeah, this match eventually saw Ernest Miller come out victorious and becoming the WCW commissioner, which would be effective midnight on that night. So even though he was winner and was the newly appointed commissioner, Ric Flair had him escorted from the arena as well. And then the next match that we had scheduled was Diamond Dallas Page versus the Chosen One, Jeff Jarrett. Well, it was supposed to be DDP versus Jeff, but when Jeff came out for it with during his entrance, he played a promo where DDP said he would face Chris Kanyon anywhere, anytime. So Jeff disappeared for about 15 minutes while DDP wrestled Kanyon, and this was a very good match. It really was. I mean, DDP and Kanyon were always two of my favorites, especially Kanyon. I mean, he was a damn workhorse in the ring, and he's another one like Sean O'Hare who had an unfortunate tragic end, which and I was living in New York at the time when the news broke out about Kanyon, because he was from Queens, New York. So it's just yeah, I think he lived in the Howard Beach area. I'm not 100% sure, but it was just very unfortunate. Anyway, after some good brawling back and forth and a pretty nasty drop on the stairs outside where that cut DDP over the eye, Kanyon would win the match. After some interference from Jeff Jarrett and hitting DDP with the flatliner, or downward spiral, as WWF fans would remember, because that's what Edge called it when he used to do that move. Now, then afterward, we finally got the originally scheduled match of DDP versus Jeff Jarrett, and this was also a very good match as well. And, man, they brawled all around the arena using pretty much anything and everything they could get their hands on. There was some interference from Kanyon, but it wasn't enough to take out the master of the Diamond Cutter, because as Jeff tried to hit DDP with his Slap Nuts guitar, DDP would move out of the way and Kanyon would get hit by it, the guitar, and then Jarrett would get hit with the Diamond Cutter, and DDP would be victorious. And we had the main event of the pay-per-view, which was Scott Steiner versus Kevin Nash for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. And throughout the night, they all kept wondering if Kevin Nash was even going to show up because of whatever happened to him on Nitro the week before. And then before either man could make their way to the ring for the match, Ric Flair decided to come down and to join Tony Schiavone and Scott Hudson on commentary. And we had Michael Buffer doing the introductions as he always did for WCW, which always gives me chills. He's a great announcer. But I really loved it when he what did the introductions for the Royal Rumble in 2008. That was fun. And then Scott Steiner came down and ordered Michael Buffer to leave the ring. And then showed the video of when Sid broke his leg in their match at the previous pay-per-view. I mean, it was so uncomfortable to watch the video back then, and it's uncomfortable to watch it now. It's not a video that I recommend anybody go out of their way to check out, because it is just... Oof. Anyway, then Rick Scott asked Ric Flair to come into the ring, and Flair announced that the loser of the match must leave WCW. And they ordered the referee to start counting out Kevin Nash because he had not shown up yet. But then Kevin Nash did show up in a wheelchair, selling the apparent broken leg Steiner had given him on Nitro the week before. And then Scott had his back turned after, you know, berating Nash and... didn't see that Nash was faking the broken leg, because he got up, got into the ring, grabbed the WCW World title, hit Scott in the face with it, then they rang the bell, and Nash pinned him to win the match. Or so we thought, because then an angry Ric Flair got on the mic and announced that this was now a 2 out of 3 falls match, no DQ, and this news, and then they cut to a shot backstage of DDP, making his way to the ring upon hearing this news, which he was not happy about, apparently, until he eventually got beat up by Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell, and then they locked him inside of a crate, so he could not do anything about it. And then, you know, Steiner and Nash, they brawled a little bit in and out of the ring. It was a good little scuffle that they had, colossal tussle, anyone who, you know, is a something to wrestle with Bruce Pritchard fan. And eventually Nash got knocked out at ringside, and Scott told Rick to make this a false count anywhere match, which he did. And then Scott got the pin at ringside, and Flair said that the first pin that Nash gotten didn't count, which, that if that was official, I'm not sure. And the rest of the match was mostly Nash getting his ass kicked by Steiner, but Nash did make a brief comeback at some point before Flair interfered, giving Scott a steel chair to hit Nash over the head with, and then Nash making a little bit of a comeback again, and then Medeja, who was Scott Steiner's manager at the time, he hit her with a sidewalk slam that looked pretty damn good after she jumped into the ring and beat up referee Charles Robinson. Eventually, Scott Steiner would get the win after hitting Kevin Nash with some brass knuckles and then applying the Steiner recliner, and another referee coming in and doing the whole, you know, lifting the arm up 3 times and seeing if they respond, which, of course, Nash did not, because he was knocked out by the brass knuckles. And then, so Scott Steiner would retain the WCW World title, and Kevin Nash was out of WCW. And honestly, overall, this entire pay-per-view was much better than I had anticipated it being. I really genuinely enjoyed it a lot. You know, I haven't really watched that many WCW pay-per-views other than the ones that I mentioned in my Starrcade review. But after watching this one, I'm honestly very excited to go back into that vault and watch a lot more of WCW shows going forward. And looking at my podcast schedule, the next WCW pay-per-view that I'll be covering on here will be in July, with Bash at the Beach 1996. You all should already know why that one is important. And if you don't, well, stay tuned, kids. Chosen one. And that is going to do it for this edition of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views. I hope you all enjoyed listening to my recap of the whole thing, and I hope that you'll check out this pay-per-view whenever you get the chance to do so. And also, please be sure to check out my previous Classic Wrestling pay-per-view reviews for Bad Blood 1997, Survivor Series 2002, Starrcade 1997, and Royal Rumble 2000, all of which were very, very good pay-per-views that you should all definitely check out. And also check out my retro film reviews, which I'm going to try to get one sometime out over the next couple of weeks. I haven't done that since I did The Adventures of Baron Munchausen way back in, I believe, September. but I'm going to try to get one out before this month is done. That is my promise. And also my other film reviews, check those out, my worst to best rankings, and my regular podcast episodes, all of which you can find right here on the Mennonites Podcast channel that you can subscribe to on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, YouTube, or wherever you can find the Mennonites Podcast. And follow me on Twitter at IamFonzitude for all podcast updates. Follow me on Instagram at Fonzitude to enjoy the pictures and memes I share. Follow me on Vero at Fonzitude for everything else that I do on there. And you can, you know, check me out and you can talk to me on any of those. I'm always happy to meet new people and talk to you guys. And support the podcast by donating to my Hall of Justice on Patreon for only $1 a month. The link will be in the description below. Check out the official Mennonites Podcast store for shirts, stickers, pins, magnets, wall art, pillows, notebooks, and much more. That link will also be in the description as well. And as always, thank you all so much for tuning in, for subscribing, for listening, for watching. If you're on YouTube, I love and appreciate every single one of you. Do I truly and genuinely do, and I hope you all enjoy the rest of your week, and that the work part of it goes by quick enough and you can enjoy the weekend. And this has been Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views from the Mennonites Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time. Bye-bye.